Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones. Call in and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Welcome back from a Mother's Day weekend. I hope everyone had a great time over the weekend and remembered to call mom. And for the moms out there, welcome. I hope you all had a great weekend and had yourself pampered all over the place. This is Southern Sense. I'm your hostess with the most, just the radio, along with my very good to his mom son, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. It's great to be here for another exciting edition of Southern Sense, the 2013 version. Thank you for that introduction. I hope everybody had a happy Mother's Day. Yourself and our family, we had a big spread, had all the family over. Oh, always nice to have family and kids, and lo and behold, it always ends in excitement. And well, anyway, we'll get to the business at hand. But just to remind everybody that your awesome host, who's not only introducing congressmen and being quoted in overseas newspapers, has done a great job on our Southern Sense website. We also have so many ways of communicating. I don't even know what words I'm looking for, but we have Twitter and Facebook. We want to be your friend, as well as Annie's got a barrage of other new networking things that'll take us into the 27th century. But we want to be your friend. And the website, Annie, is really, really cool. I actually was looking at it, and somebody at the cafe kind of looked over my shoulder and said, "Oh, that's really cool." I said, "Where's that?" I said, "Right here, my friend." Well, anyway, we're glad to be here. And we got a lot to talk about, too, because over the weekend the story broke, obviously, of the IRS sticking it to the Tea Party.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that. The details that the media is not saying that I would feed to. And we'll get into that later on in the show. We got a great guest be calling in from New Zealand. It's Trevor Loudon. He's a blog called The New Zeal. And I was Skyping with him last and he sounds like a real pisser. You can find us on our site, southernsense.webs.com. And our dedication today, I wrote in the description to the show, for Captain Reed K. Nishizuka, who was killed just recently, April 27th, 2013. But when I was going through the research, I found that there were three other soldiers that were also killed, and we're dedicating the show to all four of them, all four of the four heroes. And Mike, if you are ready, pull up the Air Force mix if you can. I think we have it here. Okay. And this is kind of difficult to do because, as I said, it involved four. So I'll try to patch this together as best as I can. This was from the Star Advisor. A 30-year-old Kauai man was killed among four Air Force personnel killed Saturday near Kandahar Airfield in Afghanistan in the crash of an MC-12 aircraft. Captain Reed K. Nishizuka, the pilot, was assigned to the 724th Reconnaissance Squadron Beer Air Force in California. Also killed, Captain Brendan L. Sear, 28, of Woodbridge, Virginia, assigned to the 906th Air Refueling Squadron at Scott Air Force Base, Illinois. Sergeant Richard Dixon, 24, of Rancho Cordova, California, assigned to the 306th Intelligence Squadron, Beale Air Force Base, California. And Staff Sergeant Daniel N. Fenn, 30, of Moorhead, Kentucky, assigned to the 552 Operation Support Squadron, Tinker Air Force Base, Oklahoma. The four Air Force members were deployed to the 361st Expeditionary Reconnaissance Squadron with the 451st Air Expeditionary Wing, Kandahar Airfield. Their bodies were recovered. The Pentagon said the cause of the crash is under investigation. However, initial reporting indicates there was no enemy activity in the area at the time. The plane crashed in Zabul province, about 110 miles northeast of Kandahar Airfield. The MC-12W Liberty is a medium to low altitude twin-engine turboprop aircraft, according to the Air Force. Its primary mission is providing intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance support directly to the ground forces. This is from the 940 Wing. Beale Air Force Base. Beale Air Force Base has brought home another fallen hero. Staff Sergeant Richard Dixon of Rancho Cordova, California, was one of four airmen who perished when their MC-12 aircraft went down in Afghanistan. Just a year ago, this was written by Master Sergeant Michelle Dutch-Sins. Just a year ago, I was among the airmen lining the streets of our base, render our full final respects to the Army Specialist Chase Marta. It's a procession we all hoped would never have to be repeated. This time, last year, the 940th Wing Force Support Squadron, two of our members deployed to Dover Port Mortuary, and I distinctly remember wondering if they helped already with this fallen soldier to come home. Dover Port Mortuary is a place where all our fallen warriors from all branches of the military are brought before returning home. As I watched a pure white plane from Dover land here at Beale that morning a year ago, my experiences as a sustainment flight NCO suddenly came together for me. I've been to the Dover Port Mortuary for hands-on training. That training impresses upon you that treating fallen soldiers with the utmost respect is expected from the moment they arrive to the moment they leave. I've seen firsthand the diligence and precision taken to ensure absolutely every detail is perfect, with the ultimate goal being to get the fallen warrior home as soon as possible to family members who are waiting. Honor, dignity, respect. We do that for them, and we do it for their family. Well-trained members, the Port Mortuary, perhaps even a reservist from my unit here at Beale, have ready Staff Sergeant Dixon for his final journey home. And I know that as he leaves Dover, everyone will line the tarmac there to send him off with a salute. taking care of our fallen and the experts who come to take them home is the hardest, but the most fulfilling and a special job we do in sustainment flight. I am proud of our members who serve and do such a superb job at Dover Mortuary. And as the White Plain lands to seal, the streets once again will be lined with hundreds of airmen waiting to render their final salute, a final show of respect. We owe this and a debt of gratitude to all the men for their ultimate sacrifice. We all pray in this moment of grieving, a sense of honor and pride can be brought to them as we pay our final respect to those who have given their life for our country. To them and all the men and women that have served, are serving, and will serve, we say thank you and dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Herring.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me,
Herndon, My Name is America. And I can't sometimes doing the dedication, some of them just get harder than others.
Yep, certainly are. It's you know, it's very hard to lose and do a tribute to one soldier as we do every week, let alone several. You know, so much gets crushed in that. But as we dedicate our show every week to a soldier, this goes out to several, and may they all rest in peace, and may God be with their families.
Yes.
Good job, Annie.
Thanks. People can find Todd Allen Herring up on YouTube as well as his other website, Todd Allen, and his song there. You can download it for free. We got a fantastic guest. I met him on LinkedIn and was having a nice chat with him last night on Skype. And, I think he dropped.
No, I still see him on.
Okay. Is Trevor?
Hi.
Hi, Trevor. For
hey,
some
Trevor.
Reason, your number changed as I'm looking at it. I'm going, wait a minute. Who's this up in the call box? You came in as one number, and also the number changed. So forgive me. This is Trevor Loudon. He has a blog called The New Zeal. He's been blogging for many years. He also had a campaign to remove communists and stop their movement with the trying anti-nuclear movement. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here, Anne.
Yeah, and you were the president of ACT New Zealand Party from 2000 to 2008. Well, Southern Sense welcomes you. You have a great book that I started to read. I'm not going to screw up the title of it. Obama, The Enemies Within?
Yeah, Barack Obama and the Enemies Within. That was put out a couple of years ago, but it's basically a compilation of it's like an encyclopedia of Obama's Marxist ties, his ties to the Communist Party USA, to Democratic Socialists of America, and other Marxist groups. So it's quite a work.
It is. I was reading it, and you know, some of it I was aware of, and then others you brought forward, and I said, all right, this is where the dots are all now starting to connect, because we had in the past Dinesh D'Souza on the show, and I'd watched his movie too, and you know, you go further into depth than he does.
Yeah, like Dinesh has done a great job, but really the story, the American public still doesn't know that Obama has been involved with the Communist Party, Democratic Socialists of America, and other Marxist groups his entire life. You know, from his boyhood days, his Columbia days, his Occidental College days, Chicago, when he was in Harvard at Boston, it's never stopped. And now that he's in power, he's appointing his friends to all sorts of positions of authority.
Yeah, and then end up with the mess that we now have our country in. No, man. Trevor, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Because what I pulled up wasn't really much information.
Okay, look, I'm a New Zealand activist, blogger. I've been involved in politics here most of my life, but in the 80s, I embarked on a research project on the New Zealand left, Marxist groups, the communist groups, because what happened in 1984, New Zealand left the ANZUS military alliance. It was the Australia, New Zealand, United States military alliance. We kicked your nuclear warships out of our harbours. And that really upset me, and I started researching how it happened. And I spent a lot of time interviewing a New Zealander who had infiltrated our local Communist Party for our security services. He was a spy inside the communist movement. And he told me that basically that the reason New Zealand kicked American warships out of our harbours was because that was organized in the Soviet Union. The Soviets organized that whole process. He was actually training in Moscow and helped to implement it. And what the Soviets did, they infiltrated our local Democrat, our local Labor Party, which is equivalent of your Democrats. They infiltrated the labor unions and the peace movement, and they had so much influence that they could get that legislation passed. They destroyed an alliance with your country covertly and secretly by using our Labour Party, our unions, and our peace movement. And that got me researching the international left, and what, especially the Communist Party USA, because my friend told me that your country has always been the main target, and your Democrats have been targeted by the Soviets, the Cubans, etc., the Chinese, for decades. So what they've been doing, I've discovered, is the Communists have basically infiltrated the Democrat Party in your country through the use of the labor unions, the peace movement, etc. So now the Communists can actually dictate Democrat Party policy, and they do it all the time. So that's my background. I've researched it. While I was researching that, I discovered Obama's links to communism, and I became a bit of an authority on that. Glenn Beck used a lot of my work. It was me that exposed Van Jones, for example, the communist green job czar who had to leave the White House. So I've written a book about my research. I've got another book coming out this year, which is going to look at all the communists and communist sympathizers in your Congress. I profile more than 60 of them. So, yeah, there's a bit of a problem there.
Yeah, you've got a tour coming up August to November where you're going to be touring throughout the United States with the new book. And the new book is called Enemies Within, Communists, Socialists, and Aggressives in the United States Congress. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, well, look, nobody's touching that. You know, we all know that the communists march on the streets. We know that they're behind the anti-gun rights movements. We know that they control a lot of the labor unions. Well, they control all of them, all of the labor unions, effectively. But people have, and we understand that, you know, the communists will work with radical Islam and create a lot of problems. But people have no idea just how deep the infiltration is. And they have no idea that a lot of the people they see on TV every night, you know, they're congressmen and women with suit and ties and you know, love, beautifully made up. We have no idea that a lot of those people work directly with the Communist Party or Democratic Socialists of America and are pushing communist policy in the Congress and in the Senate all the time. You know, all of
Trevor,
you know, Obamacare was.
Oh, go ahead, Trevor. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, Obamacare came out of Democratic Socialists of America. They designed it. Cap and trade is a communist policy. The current gutting of the U.S. military is a communist policy. You know, most of the things the Democrats do were inspired by either the Communist Party USA or Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah, it's funny because we recently had a special election here in South Carolina to fill a seat that, I just forgot what his name was. I can see him.
Jim DeMint. Jim DeMint left the Senate.
Yeah, and Tim Scott took his Senate seat, so it was a seat.
Mark Stanford is the new congressman.
Right,
Tim
thank
Scott
you.
Is your U.S.
It's
senator.
My district that I can't even remember. God, I think I have to color my gray hairs so I get my memory back.
Too many autographs and pictures this weekend, Danny.
But when Elizabeth Colbert Bush was running against Mark Sanford, I went to place my vote, and I'm looking at the ballot, and I see her listed on two different parties, the Democratic Party, and then I see this one, the Workers' Party. I'm going, Workers' Party?
Okay.
And I said, I didn't know she was being endorsed or even placed herself on the ballot to the Communist Party. And I walked out of the booth scratching my head going, why is it no one said anything about this? I mean, people have to be looking at the election websites, and if they see Workers' Party endorsement, doesn't that little bell go off? And no one picked it up.
Well, that's the thing, you know. People in South Carolina are not going to, you know, there's no connection made there. The media doesn't do its jobs. People in America think that communism's a thing of the past, you know, but you've got basically, the real problem is in 1990, you know, the American labor movement used to be run by conservatives like George Meany and Lane Kirkland. They ran it, they kicked the communists out, and they had nothing to do with the communist movement. But in 1995, a man called John Sweeney became president of the AFL-CIO. Now, that was a coup organized by the Marxists. They put him in there. He was a member of Democratic Socialists of America, despite its name, a Marxist group. He got rid of the anti-communist clause in their constitution, and the Marxists flooded back. Now they control every major labor union in the country. And if you control the labor movement, the Democrats are totally dependent on the labor movement for money and manpower. So if you can control the labor movement, you control the Democrat Party. And that's how they've done it. So that's why since 1995, the left have been building up their power. You know, they couldn't do much while the Republicans were in power. But when they got the White House in 2008, they went crazy. Their whole agenda, which had been building up for years, was already written. The Democrats already had their script. It was a union script. The communists wrote it, and they just went crazy. And that's why you've had the massive changes that have occurred under Obama. It was all scripted, and the unions and the communists wrote it.
Yeah, and he's got people like Richard Trumka that have unlimited access to him. Hello, folks. What Trevor is saying is exactly this. I mean, that's how Obamacare got pushed through. And I was joking about it, but when he announced, you know, his run for the second term, the very first group that endorsed him, everyone else, not even the Democratic Party had endorsed him yet, but the first party that endorsed him was the Communist Party. And I did that on air, and no one took the ball and ran with it.
Yeah, it's because people are so scared of being labelled McCarthyist, you know, and people think, you know, the Soviet Union has collapsed and they don't want to be called McCarthyists. So these reps and Obama himself can have extensive ties to the Communist Party. They can be endorsed by them. They can go to their meetings. They can be photographed with them, and nobody will say boo. Because A, they don't see communism as a threat, and B, they're too scared to name the names. You know, if any Republican associated with the Ku Klux Klan, like these Democrats associate with the communists, it would be front page news, as it should be. But these Democrats will like Rosa DeLauro, one of the top Democrats out of Connecticut, has one of her offices in the Communist Party headquarters. I've got photographs of her hugging the leader of the Connecticut Communist Party, going to their functions. And this is one of the top Democrats. These are the people who make the policy, and they are unashamedly in bed with the Communist Party. And the same applies to Nancy Pelosi, to John Conyers, to Barbara Lee, to Danny Davis, to Jan Schakowsky, to any one of 50 or 60 top Democrats I could name straight off the top of my head.
Yeah, Carol Moseley Braun. You've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It's absolutely amazing. And they have a caucus. The communists have a caucus. They call it the Democratic Socialist, you know, caucus.
The Congressional Progressive Caucus. Now, that's nearly 80 members of the U.S. Congress, all of them Democrats, except for Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, and he's the only Senate member. There's 80 of them, basically answer to the Communist Party, the Democratic Socialist America. It was set up, the Congressional Progressive Caucus was set up by Democratic Socialists of America, which is a Marxist group, and now controls 80 of the key Democrats. And it's not just them, you know. There's a lot of the communists in Congress who aren't even members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You know, there's a whole bunch of them, like Kirsten Sinema out of Arizona. She's not a member of it, but she's hardcore left. I've got her signing Communist Party I've got screenshots of her signing Communist Party documents in the early 2000s. You know, this is pretty extensive stuff. You know, the Communist Reds aren't under the bed anymore. They're in the bed and they're getting breakfast brought in. And they're in the Democratic Party big time.
That they do. And I also remember when Hillary Clinton said she was running for president the first time, the first press interview we had, she said, "I am the new progressive." And my jaw dropped. My jaw dropped, and I said, "Let's see if anyone picks this up and runs with." And now she calls herself a progressive so openly that you don't even hear it anymore. It just goes in one ear and out the other, and nothing. That brain that's supposed to be in the right there between the two ears doesn't function, doesn't catch it, and doesn't say, "Wait a minute, there's a problem here."
Yeah, like Hillary Clinton, you know, the first job she started, her thesis was on Saul Alinsky, Marxist agitator from Chicago, who Obama was inspired by. And then the first job out of college was while she was in college, the intern for a Communist Party law firm out in San Francisco. And I don't mean just a left-wing law firm. I mean an actual Communist Party law firm. The lawyers in it were Communist Party members. And that's, you know, Hillary Clinton is a key part of this. You know, the communists controlled the Hillary camp and they controlled the Obama camp. They were guaranteed that they were going to get their candidate no matter what. They obviously favored Obama, but they would have been happy with Hillary.
Trevor, what's happened to the Republican Party? It almost seems like they were prepping for Barack Obama. I mean, whether all these, the TSA, just after 9/11, almost seemed like the GOP paved the way. All Barack Obama now is doing is, tightening the bolts and nailing down basically everything in order to surrender our Constitution.
Yeah, well, you'd have to think that way, wouldn't you? Like, I think Ann Coulter said it very, very well. She said, "There are plenty of rotten Republicans, but there are no good Democrats." You know, what has happened in your country is that the hard left has taken over the Democrat Party. You know, John Kennedy or Harry Truman wouldn't have a chance of standing as a candidate in the modern Democrat Party. But the Republicans have also been heavily influenced by the progressive movement, by some of their ties to the Council on Foreign Relations and other sort of one-worldist, globalist, communist groups. Dick Lugar, for instance, out of Indiana, a senator, he was the man who got the START treaty with the Russian side. He was basically active in a whole bunch of communist organizations, you know, while a Republican senator. So you've got that element. I see the Republican Party, there's a war going on there. You've got a lot of good conservatives, people like Tim Scott, people like Jim DeMint, who was a standard bearer, and you've got people like Ted Cruz now who are really good, true, patriotic guys. You've got that progressive holdover. So there's a real war on the Republican Party to take it back, you know, and I'm certainly hoping the Tea Party people and the real conservatives do that. Otherwise, Americans have no choice. They have hardcore socialism as the Democrat Party, socialist light as in the Republican Party. But so, you know, there's hope there. But, you know, a lot of what George Bush did, he paved the way for Obama, you know, the expansion of the Patriot Act and that kind of thing. There was some horrific stuff in there. And when he was in power, he could have abolished the Department of Education. He could have done a whole lot of things which he never did. And in a lot of ways, he did pave the way for Obama.
Yeah, Trevor, your connection is breaking up a lot. You're using Skype to call in?
Well, do you want me to call, hang up and call back and see if I can get a line?
Yeah, why don't we try that? And we're going to take a short break and let you call back in.
Okay.
I have two questions when you get back, too. All righty.
Okay.
Are we going to talk or are we going to call back in?
We can talk because a lot of this that he has in the book is extremely interesting. And Cat Girl said she reads his columns and she's great. I'm going to ask if we're going to switch to Red State. Yeah, like my my independence. I like being able to do my show without anyone else controlling its content. And if I kick someone out, it's me, not someone else. Oh, we got Trevor back in online. Let me get my Trevor, welcome back.
Hi there. Is that any better?
A lot better. A lot better, yeah. You know, because you do use call in with Skype, but you end up with a bad connection or whatever on they sometimes.
Well, and we're glad you're back, that's for sure. Trevor, quick question. A lady in our chat room posted a question, and it's actually a question I have for you. Who is Obama and where did he come from? It seems like out of nowhere, this guy who is basically a community organizer is a state representative, then a U.S. senator, then a president, awful fast. I mean, this is almost film a movie about the rise to power, Damien Thorne.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very good question. Look, see, what the communists do is they pick young, promising people, usually black or Latino, and they use their labor union contacts through the Democrat Party, and they use their community groups to promote these people to high office. That happens all the time, all the time. Obama was picked out very, very early. You know, his childhood, his parents were basically communist sympathisers on both sides. His grandparents were communist sympathisers. He was picked out as a young, promising guy. He was mentored by Frank Marshall Davis in Hawaii, a Communist Party member, a hardcore member. He went to Occidental, mixed with the communists there, went to Columbia, mixed with the communists there, went out to Chicago, worked with the communists in Chicago, went to Harvard, worked with the communists in Harvard. Every step of the way, his path has been smoothed. So basically, the communists openly admit they campaigned for him in Chicago. That Obama was chosen out early as a man for high office, and he's been promoted by the hardcore left every step of the way. Like, his first political meeting was in the home of Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, the Weather Underground terrorists. Quentin Young was there, a member of Democratic Socialists of America, a Marxist, a man who inspired Obama to adopt, you know, socialized health care. You know, he was Obama's personal physician. Everywhere you go in Chicago, he is connected to the Marxists and the communists. So they built him up, they promoted him, just like they did with Jesse Jackson, just like they did with Carol Moseley Brown and a whole bunch of Antonio Villagrosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, a whole bunch of people I could name. So Obama was nurtured by the left. His mentor, the woman who got him his first job in politics in Chicago and took him to that meeting with Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, was Alice Palmer, an Illinois state senator. He took over her job. She had ties to three Soviet fronts. She was an official in the International Organization of Journalists, of the World Peace Council, and one other, which I can't remember. She was going to the Soviet Union all the time. She was a key Soviet operative, basically an agent of influence, and she got Obama his first job. So if you really look at it, Obama was put in his job by the Communist Party, by Democratic Socialists of America, and the communists. There are a lot of links of the people around him to Cuba and the Soviet Union. So I would say definitely the communists put him in power, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the Soviets and the Cubans gave him a bit of help, you know, plus the Saudis and some other people. So really, Obama is a stealth left candidate. He really is a Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And when he was running for election the first time, Sean Hannity had this on his program, and every time he turned around, he was saying the Stop Hillary Express. And my husband and I would be driving and listening to Hannity, and I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs at the radio, going, "You have no idea. We're better off with Hillary, should she win, than with Obama. At least we can control her. Don't do this. Stop Hillary Express. You have no idea what you're doing to the country." And no one wanted to listen.
Well, and you're quite right, because people were people understood that Hillary was a menace, and she was certainly a menace, but they had no idea that Obama was going to be even worse. But, you know, like, the connections were there for all to see. Nobody did any due diligence on him. And the media, who, you know, you look at Sarah Palin, the media practically went through her underwear drawers, you know, her kids' Facebook pages, her husband's connection to the Alaska Independence Party. All of that was scrutinized, and that's fair enough, you know, so it should be. But Obama, who has connections to the communists and socialists that go back for decades, his entire life, and are easily found, was given a total free pass, because everybody was in love with the idea of this black candidate. It's charismatic, he was young, good-looking guy, and nobody wanted to know, you know, and nobody did due diligence, and this is what we've got as a result.
Yeah, and one of the first things he did, not the first, but one of the first executive orders he issued, was to seal all of his records so that no one could possibly even obtain them. And you know, what person has ever done that? None. And he talks about transparency.
Well, you know, a guy who campaigned on transparency, he was going to be the most transparent president ever, seals his college and personal records. You know, isn't that a major red flag right from the start?
Yeah, and there's been a picture running around from back in Chicago where there was this Saul Alinsky play they put up, and here was Obama sitting on the board. And it says Barack Obama, and he's getting thank yous and kudos from this communist group as they put on this Saul Alinsky play.
Yeah.
And hey, this is the newspaper.
Yeah, well,
you can pull
exactly
it up on a microfiche.
Most of the other people on that thing were members of Democratic Socialists of America. Most of them. And just a little background on Democratic Socialists of America. That's America's largest Marxist group, 7,000 members. They are active in the Democrat Party. They hold office. Congressmen like Danny Davis, Jan Schakowsky, Jerry Nadler are members of it. They are the main backers of Obama, and they call themselves Democratic Socialists of America, but they're actually a Gramsciist communist group. They are a Marxist group, and they work through the Democrat Party all the time. They were the ones, most of the people on that committee that put that play together with Obama were members of that organization. He's worked with them all the way. He's hired them. People like Ron Blum, his car czar, was a member. Cornel West, who was in his black advisory committee, was a member. He's just, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, now we've got someone in the chat room that's asking a couple of questions. The first one she has, she wants you to talk about the importance of the fall of the Berlin Wall to banking and the spread of communism. You know, it is funny. Prior to the fall of the Berlin Wall, you know, if you said the word communist, it was kind of like, oh, that's a bad person. But after the fall, with the restoring of the full Germany and then eventually the collapse of the Soviet Union, you know, you can walk around the street and proudly say, I'm communist, or wear a Che Guevara shirt, proudly, you know, saying, I'm a communist.
Yeah. It's just a cool thing to do, isn't it?
Prior to the wall.
Well, that's right, and it's very, very interesting. I talked before about a guy who trained in Moscow, a New Zealander who trained in Moscow and who infiltrated the New Zealand Communist Party and was sent to Moscow for training, and who helped to implement our anti-nuclear laws. Well, he was there 83, 84. He was there when Grenada was invaded by Ronald Reagan, and the Soviets hated that. But because that was a communist base they were setting up there. But what he said was then a very interesting, and this is corroborated by a whole bunch of other sources. He said at that stage, the communists were planning a major retreat. They were going to abandon the word communist. They were going to give up a word because they knew that the West would give them a lot more money, a lot more aid, and lower its defenses if they backed off the communist word. So they were told, these communists were taught in 1983, 1984, there was going to be a huge retreat. You know, and the goal was they would retreat, the West would disarm, the West would give them money, but...
Did we lose Trevor?
I think we just lost Trevor. I really do. He'll probably call back in just a split second. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to our listeners that Skype is acting up on his end, I guess.
Well, but, he's calling from a long ways away.
Yeah, New Zealand. Yes, he is calling from New Zealand. And there's a 16-hour time difference, because when I was talking to him last night, we were trying to calculate, you know, what time, his time zone, and we checked, and it was a total of 16 hours. Wow. So, anyway.
That's really interesting. How basically we got him back. But it's really interesting what Trevor was talking about. And this is throughout history. Basically, it's the same party, but they give you a different face. It's still a crack house, but on the outside, they fix it up. They paint it. They give you a new sidewalk, handicap ramp.
Yeah, well, this is exactly what's happened in Russia now. Cause...
You there?
We're here.
Okay. Well, you're quite right. This is all cosmetic. You know, Putin is a KGB man. You know, now, basically Russia, China, Cuba, North Korea, Nicaragua, Venezuela are all allies, and they're allied with Iran. So you've got basically
Go ahead, Trevor. Sorry about that.
So basically, you know, America thinks the Cold War is over, but these countries, you know, Russia and China, are openly allied now, and their aim is basically to take the United States down. The United States military is the only thing standing between them and world domination.
Wow. Well, why? I mean, they stand as a republic. Even the communists stand to gain incredible amounts of power and money. I mean, why in the world would they want to bring us down? I guess from my standpoint, I just don't understand that. I mean, Putin
Thing, isn't it? You know, you're an American. You know, you live in the freest, most benevolent country in the world. But if you live in China or Russia and you've been through the KGB or the Communist Party for all your life, you don't think like that. You think in terms of power. You know, Stalin said a famous thing once that he was talking about. Somebody said, you know, he should watch out for the Pope, you know, because the Pope could be had a huge moral authority. And Stalin just said, oh, how many divisions does the Pope have? You know, they think in military power, you know, just basic power terms. That's how they think. You know, Putin wants power. He wants dominance. He wants world authority. Same with the Chinese. Same with Iran. They're working for that. They don't care about wealth. They don't care about that people starve or have, you know, all the things they want. All they care about is exerting their authority. And that's the kind of mentality Americans have to understand. There are people in the world like that. You know, it's very hard when you live in South Carolina and you've got a nice house and, you know, you can take your kids to the Little League in the weekends and everything's going pretty good and it's a really benevolent, friendly, nice society. It's hard to imagine that there are countries out there who are ruled in a very, very different way. And they want power. It's the same, you know, right back from Alexander the Great, Hitler, whatever. That's how they think. And
yes.
And they are just the same as they ever was. And America is the number one stumbling block to what they want. They don't want to be second fiddle. They were humiliated by Reagan. They want their revenge.
Yes,
Annie, before you comment, I just had a question. Have Americans just like, and dumbed down, or are they just plain and simple stupid, or what? It seems like Annie, who started her Tea Party, all of a sudden, I mean, the media portrays them as the enemy when they're basically retirees who worked all their life to help keep the Republic.
Exactly. I mean, the Tea Party are the most patriotic people in the country, you know, and I've met thousands of them. Wonderful people. But you got to look at it, you know. The Soviets and the Communists have been trying to take America down for more than 50 years. Now, after World War II, the left started to infiltrate the teachers' training colleges, the universities, and the journalism schools. You got to realize that in the old days, journalists used to be trained on the job. You know, they were like apprentices. They'd work for a local newspaper. They would cover the little league baseball games, the court cases, the county fairs. They were normal Americans with normal American values. But after World War II, they were trained in the journalism schools, and the left targeted those schools, took them over. So now 80% of American journalists identify themselves as liberals, and a lot of them are far worse than liberals. You know, that's the American, you know, Hollywood was taken over, the journalism schools were taken over, the universities were taken over, the institutes of higher learning, and they are completely out of touch with normal American values. And that is why you've got the situation you've got today. You know, there was the famous journalist scandal in 2010. It was revealed that 400 top journalists, Washington Post, New York Times, The Nation, a whole bunch of major opinion shapers were colluding together on an email list to denigrate Sarah Palin and to promote Barack Obama. Now, many members of that group were members of Democratic Socialists of America or tied to the Institute for Policy Studies out of Washington, D.C., the most left-wing Marxist non-profit in the country, directly tied to the KGB, directly tied to the Cubans, and these people were manipulating the news stories in your country to, as I say, to denigrate Sarah Palin and promote Barack Obama. And that kind of thing goes on all the time.
What I was going to make a comment was, you were mentioning World War II, but most Americans are completely unaware that during World War II, a lot of the Muslim countries and tribes sided with the fascists. And when Germany fell, they transferred their allegiance to Russia. And what they're doing here in the United States, basically the Muslim extremists, as I hear everyone call them, every time they take over a land or an apartment building or some other complex, they stamp it so that no one else could ever have that property, only someone who is a Muslim. And this is how they're trying to take over our country, not just through the laws and trying to convince people that they're not bad, but they want to take it over inch by inch physically. And they are just as bad, or in many ways worse than communism.
Well, yeah, and that's a very key point. And you know, radical Islam is certainly trying to do exactly as you say. But and this is a big thing that most people miss, even most conservatives miss. You're quite right. A lot of them used to be allied to the Nazis. They then switched their allegiance to the communists. You know, we talk about Al-Qaeda and Fatah and all these terrorist groups. All of them are tied to Russia. You know, the number two man in Al-Qaeda was a KGB agent. You know, Fatah, the Palestine Liberation Organization, Hamas, all of them are tied to Russia. All of them are also, and Iran. Russia and Iran are allies. The Russians have been infiltrating the Islamic seminaries and infiltrating the radical Islamic movement since the 1920s. And they use radical Islam against the West as a weapon. Now, that doesn't mean that a lot of these Islamic radicals are aware of that. A lot of them aren't. They just think they're going to, you know, get 72 virgins and go to, you know, heaven if they kill some infidels. But the top levels of that movement are manipulated by the Russians, the Iranians, and the Chinese. And they're using simple demographics to take over your country. You know, so that's another aspect of it. But people have to realize your State Department goes to Russia and China and says, oh, we have to work with you guys to counter Islamic extremism. was just absolute baloney. The Russians and Chinese control Islamic extremism. They direct it. They finance it. They train them. They fund them. You know, it's just it's a farce. You know, that's something Americans have to realize. Radical Islam is a tool of the Russians.
Yeah, and no one is paying attention. They even are dismissing the fact that this Boston bomber gone to Chechnya and then just disappeared into areas that were actual training camp. And
yeah.
Is anyone ringing the bell on that one? They say, oh, that's not important. He was American. American, my and I'm not going to curse
you. Yeah, look, there are thousands of people like him in the United States. Thousands of them, and they're just waiting for the opportunity or the signal to do what they need to do. If America, you know, ever goes to war with Iran, if there is a battle, you'll see hundreds and thousands of these people who might be taxi drivers in Baltimore or, you know, run a 7-Eleven in Missouri or whatever. They are sleepers waiting to do some terrible things to your country if it ever comes to the crunch. So, and they're coming through the Mexican border all the time. So America's been set up for some pretty bad stuff.
Now,
and
Trevor, I'm gonna tease your brain a little bit because maybe you saw the same article I did. I don't remember if it was in Newsweek or some other news magazine, but this was prior to 9/11. Excuse me. And I was sitting in the doctor's office thumbing through this, and they were talking about the OTMs, other than Mexicans, that were crossing the border in the south.
Oh, yeah.
And this was, this might have been back in 2000, I saw the article. And I'm reading about it, and they're naming the countries, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Iran. I'm looking at these names, and I'm going, I didn't know that. And they had their pictures of someone that was a Mexican illegal, and someone that was from the Mideast illegal. And, yeah, they take on characteristics and looks pretending to be a Mexican when, in truth, they were, Islamic extremists. And all of a sudden, after 9/11 hit, I could not find the article anywhere. It was like it scrubbed from the Internet.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. I've read a lot on this. There is actually an area in Venezuela, Uruguay, Paraguay, that's a base for Middle East terrorists. Venezuela is helping with this as well. They're basically shipping Iranian terrorists into Venezuela, Nicaragua, Paraguay, and then infiltrating them up through the U.S. border, posing as Mexican illegals. They then go and set up little cells, all over America. They are there now, and they're coming through your border all the time. So I'll tell you a little story. The FBI in the 1980s were monitoring a guy. He had a 7-Eleven in Missouri, right? He was a member of Hamas. He'd come from Palestine. He went to Puerto Rico, married a Puerto Rican woman, converted her from Catholicism to Islam. They moved to Missouri, set up a 7-Eleven, and he was coordinating Hamas cells all over the country. Now, they eventually had a daughter. She became a teenager, and she started hanging out with a local black kid. And the father was not happy. He was very, very racist. He didn't like it at all. And the FBI were monitoring this house. They had it bugged. One night, there was a massive fight, and the father killed the daughter, stabbed her with a knife. The mother and the father concocted a story that there was self-defense, and the FBI had a problem. They thought, well, we know he murdered her. We can prove it. But if we arrest him, that's going to mean we can't monitor his networks around the country. So they had a choice, do we let him away with murder and keep monitoring his activities, or do we arrest him? They decided to arrest him, and they tried him for murder, and he was convicted. But that meant they couldn't monitor the networks anymore. But that's just one example. This was in the 1980s. This was way before 9/11 or anything like that. way before the invasion of Iraq. These people have been targeting your country for a very long time, and they're very, very well entrenched. And they've got Democrat Party politicians in their pockets.
Yeah, and you can see that with the way they treat the Muslim Brotherhood, having the Muslim Brotherhood recognized and brought into the White House as guests.
Yes.
And I'm sure George Washington and Thomas Jefferson they're turning over in their graves.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, you know. They are, the Muslim Brotherhood has been made respectable. You know, there's American money going into Egypt, and John McCain, Republican, is involved in this. There's American money going into Egypt to train the Muslim Brotherhood to take over that country. You know, that the and that's a very good, another thing people need to realize, the Arab Spring was organized by the communist parties of that region, working hand in glove with the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, so you've got in Egypt now, you're going to have, just like in Iran, you're going to have a communist-aligned Islamic power controlling the Red Sea and threatening Israel. And that's what the Arab Spring was all about. And your government and your AFL-CIO backing it and still continue to back it to this day.
Trevor, why is Republicans doing nothing? I mean, it almost seems like they are – it almost really makes me think that they're Democrats, but that these people just ran everybody, and it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, you're one of them. You've just got a different R or a D attached to your name.
Yeah. Well, the left have infiltrated the Republican Party to a degree. A lot of them are progressives, insiders. But I do not subscribe to the theory that the Republicans are the same as the Democrats. The Democrats have been totally taken over by the left. The Republican Party is divided. You've got the bad guys, the progressives, the wimps, the socialists, the one-worlders. They're a big faction of the GOP. And then you've got the true patriots, the Tea Party faction, the Ted Cruzes, the Jim DeMints, who are sound, decent, loyal Americans. So really, when you're talking to Republicans, you've got to specify who. There are some that are good, some that are terrible, some that are working for the other side. But, you know, so you can't just vote R and think everything's going to be fine. It doesn't work that way. But it isn't quite the same. I don't think it's accurate to say they're both the same, you know. One side is totally rotten, been totally taken over. One side is half taken over. But, you know, it's not a good situation by any means.
Trevor, what's your take on Benghazi? A lady in the chat room asked, well, what do you think the truth is there? You know, to be honest, even myself, I watched three broadcasts. I watched CBS, Fox, and another network. I got three different stories that weren't even remotely close. So you could say, well, in the middle lies the truth. Well, they were just all like, well, what's your take?
Well, look, it is confusing, and I don't know as much as I'd like to on it. I think there was gun running going on into Syria, organized through Benghazi. They were getting weapons from Libya and other sources and funneling them into Syria. So that got embarrassing. It could have been exposed. And I think the decision was made, do we save these guys and risk the truth coming out, or do we let them die a horrible death and cover things up? I think that was the decision that was made in the White House. You know, an operation had gone wrong. There was trouble brewing. They knew that if these guys survived, people could tell tales, and they deliberately withheld aid to let them die to cover their own backsides. I think that's the essence of it.
Yeah, we're going to be doing an entire show on Benghazi on Friday. I'm going to switch subjects just a little bit. Have you been following these attacks on the Tea Parties, pro-Israel groups, you know, other conservative groups by the IRS on our people?
Yeah.
Now, what people don't know, they keep on saying it goes back to 2010, but it actually goes even further than that. It goes back to March of 2009, because I formed our Tea Party group in May, and we were discussing this, and there was an attack on, I think it was called the Tax it was an anti-tax group. And they ordered it in March 2009, and they appeared on, I believe it was, and they were talking about I had caught, and when we were forming our group, we were all trying to decide whether or not we were going to be a 501c3 or if we were going to be, you know, any sort of a corporate group. And we decided to completely forego that and just remain a loose-knit group of friends, specifically because we were aware of IRS targeting these patriotic groups.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew that.
Well, look, I suspected that would happen, and I predicted that would happen back before 2008. I predicted that if Obama got into power, he would use the IRS and other organizations to harass his enemies. And that's why a lot of business people are reluctant to get in to support the Tea Party or support patriotic movements or even support the GOP, because they know they will be flagged. And you look at the Koch brothers, the immense campaign that's been mounted against them because they fund anti-Obama causes. You know, there's no, you know, when the Republican, you know, Nixon did this too. That's what he was impeached for using the IRS to harass his enemies. So this is nothing new, but this is going to a much, much deeper level. This isn't just a few enemies. They will use the IRS or whatever to harass a whole movement. No, just
yeah.
to march their opposition.
I found the name of the group. It was taxcheatstamps.com. So if everyone wants to go over to YouTube, you can catch the YouTube video, just tax cheat stamps. And I pulled up the article of impeachment, and there are words that on the Hill, they are moving towards impeaching him. And I went back to the articles of impeachment, and, you know, you and I are from the same era, so this is something we don't forget. Article 1, Richard M. Nixon, using the powers of his high office, engaged personally and through his close subordinate and agents in the course of conduct or plan designed to delay, impede, and obstruct the investigation. And doesn't that sound familiar with what's going on today? It's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and I hope the Republicans finally grow up here and actually go after him on this, because this is blatant use of the IRS, a government agency, to harass his opposition. That's what the Russians do. You know, this is how communists take over a country. They use the power of the state to destroy their opposition, and that's what Obama is doing. And if he's allowed to get away with it, this will only accelerate. So I think, you know, this is an issue the Republicans have legitimate grounds to pursue impeachment, and I certainly hope they do so.
Is that possible, though? It really seems like such a huge percentage of Americans almost are communists now, or are abundantly stupid. They if he were to say you're all guerrillas, they would believe it.
Yeah, I know, but you look at it, you know, history is always shaped by minorities. If you look back to the American Revolution, 3% of Americans were involved in that. You know, 40% of the country supported the British. The rest didn't care. You know, this isn't a new problem, you know, but it was 3% guided by a vision and with good leadership took on the greatest military empire the world had ever known, and they beat them. You know, there's a lot of dumbed down Americans there. The education system has done its job well, but I think there are more Americans who care about the Constitution and understand the roots of America now, and that's been, you know, there are more people like that, I think, than there have been for a very, very long time as a percentage of the population. And the Tea Party has been a huge part of that.
Do you think Barack Obama and many others are making the move to limit ammunition and so forth? Because them against
absolutely
the possible, because obviously veterans and outdoorsmen, hunters, are their biggest fear.
Yeah, well, look, the two big priorities of the left, the two number one priorities, are to disarm you internally and to disarm you externally. That's why Obama's gone after the military. That's why women are allowed to serve in combat, why gays are allowed to openly serve in the military, while weapon systems are being cut, while sequestration has targeted the military. you know, 20% of the US federal budget is taking 50% of the cuts or more. So externally, they want to destroy your military. That's number one. The next priority is to disarm you internally. That's why they push all these, you know, UN small arms treaties, and while they're trying to limit ammunition sales and trying to cut down magazine sizes, everything. Everything they can do to reduce the ability of Americans to defend themselves externally or internally, that's their number one priority. And incidents like Sandy Hook just play perfectly in for them. It gives them the opportunity they want.
Yeah, now
okay.
I was looking at this.
Annie, if you don't mind me asking him a question.
Let me follow up with this gun question before you go on
go
to
ahead.
Something else. They've got right now, they've got on the Capitol Hill a bill to get pediatricians to talk to the patients about whether there's a gun in the house. That's number one. Number two, they now have this 3D gun that's produced on basically a copier, a fancy copier. They're going after that as an excuse for gun control. You know, what's your take on this?
Well, look, it's everything they can. You know, they understand that the biggest threat to the international left is your military. You know, Russia and China would run the world today if it wasn't for your military. So that's got to be taken out. That's got to be taken care of. The biggest threat for the progressives in taking over your country internally is the fact that you have so many guns. Your Second Amendment is their biggest problem. So every single thing they can do to whittle away at it, to, you know, you imagine if every American could photocopy their own gun. You know, that would just drive them crazy. So, you know, this is a race against time. These technologies, the internet, the photocopying technology, this is empowering Americans to defend themselves and to disseminate information. So they have to clamp down on it. If they can't come after your guns, they'll come after your ammunition. If they can't ban every gun, they'll ban whatever they can. They will take it piece by piece by piece by piece by piece until they have got you where they want you. So, Americans just have to stand on that Second Amendment. They have to back the NRA. They have to do everything they can to overturn any anti-gun legislation, because if they take the guns off you, you are done. There's nothing you can do.
That is the God honest truth. And some states are moving against federal government with certain nullification passing. I know South Carolina is attempting to woo a gun manufacturer here, because I know Beretta is
right from Connecticut.
Beretta said, I'm at Maryland because Maryland's laws are too strict. We're going to go to somewhere where there's no union. So we're looking to bring them over here. You've got Texas. Governor Perry recently said, you know, hey, Chicago, you know, kick your gun producer out and send to Texas. You stay north of our border, we'll be happy. Yeah, it's
almost, America is dividing, isn't it, between the blue states and the red states. And that's right, you know, and good people are migrating to Texas and South Carolina and leaving those unionized blue states to rot, basically.
Yeah, which is happening in Chicago and Detroit. And Kat in the chat room wants to know, is it true that Americans have no clue about what communism did to the world? And that's a basically easy answer.
Yeah, look, you've been deliberately dumbed. There's several, you know, there's an old saying, I think, that the smartest thing the devil did was to convince people he doesn't exist. Well, the smartest thing the communists ever did was to convince people they either don't exist or are no longer a threat, when they're actually stronger in many ways than they ever have been in history. So Americans think it's just, you know, something that happened a long time ago. It was never a threat then. It's even less of a threat now, when actually, in truth, they have more power in the United States than they've ever had in history, ever. Even in Roosevelt's time, it wasn't this bad. So, you know, it's there. It's got a lot more names now. You know, it used to be the Communist Party. Now there's dozens of Communist Parties in your states. in the United States. Now the Democrats are basically a tool of the Communist Party. You know, they are dominated by them. So yeah, it's a threat, all right.
All right, I have a question. I have a question as we wind down. Trevor, okay, Annie, I'm going off topic, but Trevor, I got to ask. Do you believe some of these conspiracy theorists when they talk about 9/11 or just the other things that basically it almost seems, based on what you've said since the start of the show, it is extremely possible that the Communist Party could be behind all of this.
This goes back a long way. For instance, okay, go back. We're talking about conspiracies. Go back to the Kennedy assassination. Now, basically, that was done by a pro-Russian communist, a pro-Cuban communist, Lee Harvey Oswald, who had trained in Russia for 2 years. Now, immediately that happened, the communists planted stories that it was done by the CIA and right-wing extremists in Dallas. That was their immediate disinformation thing, and they've been promoting that ever since. 9/11, I think it was actually done by Arab terrorists. I think, you know, I don't believe it was done by the US government, but I will admit that there could have been people in the CIA who turned a blind eye, etc. But immediately that happened, the communists, the Libyans, started planting stories. It was done by the US government. They've been at it ever since. They sow these stories, and they get people like Alex Jones, whatever, to disseminate them to American conservatives. So, yeah, I don't want to sound like everything comes from Russia, but a huge amount of what Americans are fed is basically Russian disinformation. And you've got Russia Today, which is a Kremlin tool, boasting that it broadcasts to 83 million Americans every day right now. And they're feeding this kind of stuff into America all the time. And then you've got Al Jazeera doing the same thing on the Islamic side. So Americans are under assault in every direction.
Yeah, and the media is a big part of that. You had mentioned about, you know, the media after World War II, but I think it was even before that, because Woodrow Wilson had a big hand in influencing a lot of colleges and, you know, thinking that was coming from what he was trained in German philosophy. I think Woodrow Wilson really started the ball rolling on that.
Yeah, well, you're quite right, and this kind of stuff was happening in the 1920s, even before that. It really accelerated after World War II, but the progressive movement, which was always allied to the socialists, was active in your country since the 1890s and infiltrating the journalism schools, etc. But it really kicked off after World War II and really accelerated again in the 60s. But can I just give a little plug to the book before
Go ahead. It's your time.
Look, I've talked about Barack Obama. Well, if people want to get my book, Barack Obama and the Enemies Within, it's 700 pages, endorsed by Glenn Beck. It's the Encyclopedia of Obama and the Communist Movement. They can get that through Pacific Freedom Foundation. Just Google Pacific Freedom Foundation online, go to their website, which is a non-profit, which I'm a director of, and you can get the book through there. And go to my blog to trevorloudon.com, because that's going to give updates of my coming tour to the United States with my new book. And I'll be going to 20 states on this trip, and then next year I'll be trying to do another 20 or 30 as well. So I'm going to be in virtually every state of the union over the next year. So if people want to follow me, they can go to my blog, and my schedule will be posted on that.
All right. I'm also putting up in the chat room the Pacific Freedom and your blog site, Trevor Loudon.
Anyone
forgets, all they have to do is just Google the New Zeal, and it'll take you straight to his website. I did download your book as a Kindle, and Mike knows how much I hate Kindle. I like the feel of a book in my hand. I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to turn the corner of the page when I stop or throw a bookmark in there, which is probably usually a tissue.
Yeah, there's something about paper, isn't there, still, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And if you see my desk when I do one of the shows, I usually have about a 2-inch thick of notes from different articles that I've highlighted. And I have a whole mess of it because I have the actual articles of impeachment. I've got editorials about the DOJ doing the wiretaps. And I was laughing over that. Isn't that exactly what they attempted to impeach Richard Nixon on, you know, illegal wiretapping?
Yeah.
It's like history repeating itself.
Except that it sounds so bad. You know, the thing that Nixon didn't have, he didn't have the media on his side. That's what did him in. You imagine if Nixon had the media on his side, like Obama has the media on his side, he would have probably gone on. He'd probably still be president.
What I find funny, though, is that he targeted AP, right? Which is worldwide. But New York Times, they never went after them for releasing, you know, secret information. They left the New York Times alone, but go after AP. And when you go after AP, you're going after ABC, CBS, NBC, the people that were covering your butt before. I think he bit himself in the butt.
Yeah, I think he was the paranoid. He's very enemy focused. You know, he was a bit of a disaster. There's the difference now between, you know, Obama has done multiple things that he's been impeached for, but because the media is on his side, it is very difficult. But hopefully he's overstepped mark on this one, and the Republicans seize the opportunity because, you know, when you're using the IRS to come after enemies, that is lighting the dictatorship. That's way over the line, and they've got a good case against them, and they should pursue it.
Yeah, they did. And just before we went on air, Eric Holder made a public announcement stating that he's recusing himself from the investigation. Well, it's about time. So that's going to be a big coup. I think they did that to kind of appease the people that they are losing.
The fact that he would do that when he didn't recuse himself over Fast and Furious and any number of scandals just shows how big this is.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of another time where another Tea Party made public knowledge about their being attacked, and it was right before the election. And it was Philadelphia Tea Party because I was getting emails directly from them at the time, and they were warning everyone. I think that might have been the 2010 one that everyone's citing. They're not going over to taxcheatstamps.com, who made a public interview back in March of 2009. And this isn't something new. They just were trying to call up.
I think this would have started the day after Obama got into the White House. You know, as soon as the Tea Party blew up, he would have been targeting them, but he would have been targeting his enemies from the first day he was in office. He would have been looking at his enemies and thinking, "What can we do?" They would have had the plans all ready to go. How can we use the EPA and the IRS and OSHA and all our other agencies to harass the people who will stand against us?
Yeah, we're being bludgeoned over the head, and we're not fighting back. And if you are, you're not fighting hard enough. That's an honest truth. America's going to wake up.
Yeah, but, you know, look, I'm heartened. You know, if I go around America, and I've spoken to more than 150 audiences, you know, I never would have believed the conservative resurgence that I see there, the number of patriots standing up, the Tea Party folk. You know, there's a real polarization in America now between the progressives and the patriots. And Americans are going to have to choose sides eventually. So I can see the bad stuff. You know, I've got no illusions about how tough things are. But I think Americans need to know that their patriotic movement has been watched all over the world and people are cheering them on because, you know, New Zealanders and Australians, we understand that the stability and freedom of the world depends on a strong America. If America goes down, we all go down, all of us. There's nowhere to run. You know, if you go, if you go down, you know, China will take over us in 5 minutes. So, you know, if people think they're going to go to El Salvador, you know, to Costa Rica or New Zealand or Australia, well, that might give you 6 months. But if America goes under, there is going to be nowhere to run.
What do you think? What do you think is going to happen? Educated guess.
Well, I think Obama has overplayed his hand. I think the progressive movement has gone too far, and there's going to be a revolt. And I think there's going to be a lot of chaos and a lot of trouble. But I think America will be saved. I think the good will prevail on this.
Robert, it has been a fantastic interview. The time has just flown. We've got about 4 minutes left. I want to thank you, and I do want you to come back as a guest.
Look, I love to. You know, it's a great talking to people like to you,
well,
Anne.
I'm certainly going to, when you come to Michigan, I'm going to certainly try to see you when you come to Michigan, too.
Whereabouts in Michigan are you?
I'm in Grand Rapids, which is west end.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to be in Michigan, hopefully in this tour. If I can make it out to Grand Rapids, I'd love to do that. I had a great reception in Michigan. You know, Michigan isn't all Detroit. You know, there's a huge heartland of patriots out there. And
Amash, our congressman, is a huge Tea Party libertarian type. Where were you in Michigan?
I was in what's the town? Just north of Detroit. I spoke two places. Troy. I spoke in Troy and another little town a little bit north of there. But I had a great reception. I also spoke up in the Upper Peninsula a few times as well.
Well, great. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you.
Marquette and places like that, yeah.
Do me a favor. You get to South Carolina, bring one of your hardcover books autographed for Annie, and I'll send me the receipt.
Okay. I'll
Thank
do that.
Thank you so much.
Well, I do hope to be in South Carolina on this tour. But if not this one, the next one anyway.
Well, you've got my number, so make sure you give me a call so I can be there.
Okay. Look forward to it.
Thanks.
Okay, well, look, happy to be on any time, Annie. It was great talking to you guys, and keep up the fight. You know, we're all depending on you.
We're fighting. Just got to make sure I keep that fist closed.
Thank you again, Trevor. Wow, ladies and gentlemen, that is the man, Trevor London. Man, it'd be nice to go to New Zealand and visit him. I hear all kinds of good stories about the girls there. Anyway.
All right, we've got just 2 minutes left. I want to remind everyone that Friday's show is going to be on Benghazi. We're going to cover that. And the following show will be with Kevin Jackson, a fellow TR host and author, as well as public speaker. And that show will be followed with Nigel Innes. And then we've got some great lineup following there. Yaron Brook is coming back on. And then we're going to have a musician on in June, Matt Fitzgibbon. He's got great patriotic music. So join us again on Friday for Benghazi. I want everyone to have a happy, healthy week and come back with your patriotic dukes ready to knock some butt across America. Okay, so have a good night and God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.